Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Jules Gill, are you ready for 19 inches of Venom?
Excuse me, mate?
It's coming at you. I don't know if you've seen this, but Sony are preparing 19 inches of Venom and have announced it for the world.
Listen, I can take a foot long. It looks like a Subway has proven that. But going above that is just risky territories. We're in uncharted waters, mate. So what are you talking about, first of all? Stop.
Have you not seen they did an advert? Because they're advertising Spider-Man 2?
Yeah, a bit weird.
A little bit of a weird one. I was like, I'm pretty sure, I mean, they have to know what they're steering into. I've seen that now that it's treated a way, I saw Konami say that they had like, you know, 15 inches of snake coming at you. And I was
sure. This is the thing, like when it comes to marketing now, we are in an era where likely marketing directors are still of the old school. Like they know that they want to hit these numbers and they're just like, let's make a viral video as if it was the easiest thing to do in the world. And that means that the younger generation, they're the ones that are actually on the ground floor and they're just going to like, you know what sells? Sex. You know what sells 16 inches of snake? That just sells. That just sells, man. I mean, like, it would look how hard Capcom pivoted into the Lady Dimitrescu when it was the Resident Evil Village, when they were just like, look, like, everyone's fascinating over here. Let's change all the marketing around that. So, yeah, they know what they're doing.
I massively think that overall marketing companies or just general advertising companies have rediscovered the horn. Like, Megan Fox being all over Diablo was a thing, which is in a corset reading out people's deaths and talking about blood. Megan Fox, by the way, is in Mortal Kombat now. I don't know if you've seen
that. I have. I know that we're meant to be jumping into the questions that are being given to the viewers by the viewers, because this is the UBP with Scott Telford and Jules Gilligan. But the thing is that I just have to, I've got a bone to break and pick with Mortal Kombat. I love the fact that Ed Boon and team basically go on and they just go, look, we're just going to get every single collaboration possible we are going to get. If you thought of it and thought it was cool at some point in your life, mainly as a teenager, we're going to make it happen for you in these games. But the problem is that they hire some absolute dirty dog cock style voice actors sometimes. It's just like, why have you chosen the least charismatic voices, like voiceovers,
right,
for all of these things? Like, remember when Ronda Rousey she was Sonya Blade, wasn't she?
Sonya Blade, yeah.
And it was just like, I'm going to kick you in the butt. A text to speech function has more emotive delivery
Siri
than that.
Could do a better job.
I'm surprised they haven't done that, by the way. They need an AI generated voiceover for one of these fighters. That would be absolute gimmick. Call it like, what's his name? Mocap. They bring him back and they give him an AI generated voice. That is a gimmick that I can get behind.
Just call him Alan Irren and he gets a fatality. That's as bad as I can be on a Friday. Yeah. But I think, I wonder what if you fed an AI all of the various scripts and animations, everything that Mortal Kombat has, what would an AI generated fatality be? And then could they then put that in the game? Like some weird skin ripping, obliterating thing.
Well, this
it would amalgamate every single fatality that's ever been. And then that could be the AI character's fatality.
If you fed it every single sort of voiceover and like sound effect, its name would probably be its fatality would be punching you so hard that every single bone pops out of your body like a jack-in-the-box, and those bones then explode and it covers you in the bone marrow. That's the fatality. It's just
I tell you what though, The new, have you played the, did you play the beta for Mortal Kombat 1?
I did. I enjoyed it a lot.
It's very pretty cool. Lovely, isn't very it? Good. The when they showed, like, Li Mei, I love how much they're bringing back the Deadly Alliance and Deception characters. Li Mei's fatality, where she kicks the dude's head off and it becomes a firework.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. I like how itchy and scratchy we're getting with them. They always have been, but I like how more over the top they are.
But do you
and
know
I kind of hope they steer into that.
I think that they need to do this because remember for a time when I think Mortal Kombat X had just first dropped and that was the most, like, visually intense fatalities, brutalities, and bone breaking stuff that was going on. That was like a, to the point where it was squeamish because they were still holding on to an air of reality. They were going like, we're dark and edgy, and yes, these are over the top moves, but we're going to show you them in fascinatingly horrible detail. But as we've moved away from that, we've now just gotten to the point where it's like, listen, I'm just going to like pour a bucket of acid over you for a joke. So now I'm going to take your eyeballs, make googly eyes with them on my fingers. like it's just silly stuff now where we've gone to the grotesque rather than the actual revulsion
stuff.
Well,
it's like, I always thought that as graphics got more realistic, you couldn't do... Yeah, at some point, you can't do actual body mutilation. No one actually wants to see the real version of that. So it is always trying to walk that line. Kung Lao's fatality in MK9, where he like cuts them in half and then holds the two halves up, but it's like...
Yeah, that
it's
was pretty intense.
First.
Yeah.
That one was always kind of... I remember Charlie Brooker on his one of his yearly wipe shows talking about how that was like the line. But yeah, overall, that whole thing... What the hell were we talking about? Mortal Kombat stuff?
We were talking about Mortal Kombat stuff, fatality stuff, and we haven't even... introduced the show properly, nor actually addressed any of the viewers' questions or audience's questions, which is classic for the UBP, if I'm honest.
It is a bit. It is a vintage choice. I will say this is the Entitled Partner podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
We take all your talking points, questions, whatever's going on in the gaming world, slash your brains, and get through as many as we can. Speaking of which, I just wanted to open on the Spider-Man thing because we got asked about the old 19 inches of Venom. Megan Fox, that's what I was going to talk about. Someone asked what our thoughts were on Megan Fox being Natara in Mortal Kombat. What I was going to say was, I don't know. I've missed the Megan Fox Renaissance. I've missed the... to me, she was the woman in Transformers, and that was it. Yeah. And then she was in Jennifer's body or whatever. But now it's like, oh, she's a huge deal. And I'm like, is she? Like, well, I guess so.
I guess
she dated Machine Gun Kelly. Not that I care about Machine Gun Kelly.
I think it's what happens is that when you go away for a while from the public spotlight, and then she hasn't been in what I would consider to be any major blockbuster films for quite a while, you end up generating an air of like, oh, what are they up to? What are they doing? Mm. And, you know, she's huge on like social media still. She's like with social, like with Instagram and stuff like that. So I...
She used to like lick blood and stuff?
And I think, I assume she's done some stuff in between those two points, and that's repaired the sort of like weird damage that was done by... Well, I mean, like...
Michael Bay.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's like, I mean, it's a cool pick. I'm not, nothing against her. The only point I'm making is that I didn't
cool
realize
pick,
she was...
Though? Is it a cool pick? Like, this is the thing. Like, I'm not even, like, complaining about, like, it. I just want it to be somebody who's just got good vocal chops. Give me some actual emotion and delivery. Like, there are some people who you would not expect to be in a video game that are amazing in them. Like, as much guff as 50 Cent got. 50 Cent, Blood in the Sand. Hilarious, because he delivered that line, those lines straight, and that makes it so much more comical. And then it's like Snoop Dogg when he comes in to do the voiceovers for Call of Duty, or when he's appearing in Tekken. I'm just like, yes, because
Tekken.
He had a background stage. Do you remember?
Snoop Dogg.
He had like one where like you could fight in like a big like pit of money. It was weird.
No way. He was in True Crime Streets of New York.
He was.
Or LA
was.
Or whatever.
Yeah, he was
that,
in
yeah.
that one as well. Yes, there we go.
He gets around. The thing is, it's a really worthwhile distinction to talk about how you can't necessarily just grab a celebrity and expect that their performance will work in a voice acting role. Like, voice acting is its own art form. Like, you know, there are ways to bring characters to life through vocals alone. The thing is, I don't mind the Megan Fox Natara performance. It's fine. And like it's fine on paper. Megan Fox's Natara. I almost nothing it.
Do you know what? Yeah. That's the thing. I go in this thing where I started off like winding myself up, like, oh, I can't believe they put her in there. Like, I don't actually care. Like beyond this conversation, I ain't gonna think about it or like go onto forums and be like, oh my god, this Megan Fox has said. Like, I just don't really care. But it's just strange. It's
strange.
Because what it is it creates a tonal conflict for your ears where you're basically like, oh, this well-versed voice actor who's been in the business for absolutely ages has earned their chops, has refined that character, and then you've got somebody who literally sounds like they're walking in and just going like, hey, Krusty the Clown, one take Tony and I'm out.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things as well where I wasn't expecting her face to be Natara. I thought they would always have the video game... Odd. version. So it's like, now she just is the new Natara in this canon, which maybe means that either she dies in the story or she's like, Natara going forward will always be Megan Fox.
But then that's, you like, end up in a really weird, like, legal issue with that then, because it's like, if she is that character going forward, do you therefore have to pay her more and more rights to use her likeness going forward? Or do you then go like, okay, so Mortal Kombat 1-2, the sequel, will be, she's not looking like that, and we completely changed the character again.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's, yeah, it's just, it's a weird way for things to go. And obviously Mortal Kombat, because it is the biggest Warner Brothers property at the minute.
Yeah.
And you do have the DLC having like Homelander and John Cena / Peacemaker.
That's
and,
mad as well.
Like, they just, yeah. I honestly think that Mortal Kombat is the only positively received and talked about Warner Brothers property right now. Like in terms of the size that it's at. Yeah. Like, yeah, people, yeah. People love Batman, but like the Batman, the movie was well received, but it's not like, oh my God, I can't believe the size of this thing in terms of how much reach they want the IP to have. Like Mortal Kombat has guest characters. It's everywhere. Ed Boon was on Hot Ones. Yeah. He was doing the chicken wing thing. And I'm like, this is blowing up way exponentially bigger than it's ever been before.
Just as a small side note on that one there, I cannot believe that the Batman did not get its own video game.
Yeah,
it feels like that was like primed to just have its own movie tie-in, but we didn't get it. So
I don't know if it's just like the amount of time it would have taken to put something together. Like, I don't know, you'd have to like do like a scaled back version, like the average dev time is like 5 years kind of thing. So it's just like, it depends what size game they would have done.
Yeah.
But movie tie-ins have just largely died off because of how long it takes to match them up.
True.
Question from James Gutierrez, though, who says, if the rumors of a new Nintendo system are true, it will come with news of Metroid Prime 4 and hopefully some launch titles are a new Star Fox, new F-Zero, 3D Donkey Kong, or bring back Custom Robo. What are our top choices? Also, I kind of want to just include this question because apparently Nintendo showed off the new Nintendo system behind closed doors at Gamescom.
Did they?
And you were there, but that, I don't know if you saw it. I don't know what you can say.
Nah, man. Like, if I could say, I would be so wrapped up in NDAs, I would not be able to do that. But I can categorically say I did not see it. I was not invited, but I was on in the biz dev section where Nintendo were the only ones to have a fully closed off booth. So a lot of people had their sort of like meeting areas where they had like a flow through thing where there would be people, receptionists on the counter who would ask you your name and be able to like usher you through into these sort of like media lounges that were like small pods. Mm-hmm. But Nintendo had like one of the largest sections completely walled off. There was only one entrance in and out, and it had the only one that I saw an actual person that could have been a security guard, like proper, like massive dude dressed in like a black suit sort of thing. Like, he looked
that's
the business.
Great.
Like, if you'd popped a turtle shell on his back, that guy would have been Bowser. Like, he was good to go.
It's like Bowser / like the Spider versus Kingpin, just a big square fridge of a man. Yeah. That's cool. But yeah, so they obviously been corroborated, been mentioned quite a lot by Jez Corden over on Windows Central, mentioned by Eurogamer, that apparently that secretive meeting was the new Nintendo Switch, and that the footage that's running on it is the Unreal 5 demo of The Matrix Awakens from 2020.
It's very interesting.
So if Nintendo are aiming for that, then it's like, that's really interesting because that puts them ostensibly on par with the newest systems, which a lot of people weren't expecting because you'd expect it to be lower power or whatever. What do you think of the new Switch stuff overall, and what kind of stuff do you want from it?
I mean, I'm excited at the idea of a new Switch, especially if it maintains the same sort of like design aesthetic that they've got for the like OLED version that's out at the moment. Like, if they can basically just whack a much more powerful processor into that and a graphics card, then I would be absolutely fine if it just looked and stayed exactly the same after that. My worry is that because of the more demanding requirements, I know that the Steam Deck is obviously like the profile for that is quite thick compared to the Switch. If we're going to go down that route of like just trying to get as much power as possible, then they're going to have to deal with a lot of issues like, how are you going to keep that thing cool? How are you going to be able to like make sure the battery life is decent? Is the actual appeal of the Switch, which is being able to carry it around with you in game for hours at a time on something else, now going to be something relegated to the past? Because the Steam Deck doesn't have a good battery life, does it?
No, God, no. The first thing I thought of was the battery life, because I was like, the more you crank the processor and everything else, the less time that's going to have. The Steam Deck barely has a couple of hours. Depends what you're playing, but if you're playing anything that's high-end, even the Switch, I mean, will die in about 4 hours if it's something high intensity.
I view the Switch as being something that stands apart from, but is adjacent to the current sort of gaming console market, where because it never had the ability to play the higher end games, I never look to play them on that console. Instead, I go to the Switch for my indies, for my first party Nintendo titles. Mm-hmm. And those titles are so well engineered to work with the Switch's limited hardware capabilities that you end up getting the most out of every experience. Like now, like Mario Odyssey is still, like, to me, mind-blowing that it fits on a cartridge and is able to do what it does. Mm-hmm. I don't need a game to look better than Mario Odyssey does, in my opinion. Like, if we're tapping out at the Xbox 360, PS3, or even just early PS4 title graphics, that's fine with me. Like, stylize something. Give it good art direction rather than try and chase trends of, like, ray tracing and stuff like that. I personally don't look to the Switch for that.
No, same. I honestly think the reason that this has such high specs is more for the third-party stuff. Like, yeah. I know that, obviously, through the Activision acquisition deal, there's mention of Call of Duty coming across the Switch, and they said they want to have a feature parity, it wants to be feature complete and everything else. So I think that Guts horsepower stuff is more for the third parties to make Assassin's Creed games work better and things like that. Because, I mean, maybe they put the full U5 level system stuff behind a Star Fox or an F-Zero. I mean, a fully over-the-top F-Zero would be incredible. It's just that Nintendo have never really developed in that way. They've always been gameplay first, graphics second, for the most part. And I would love to see what the likes of Miyamoto and the very, like, Eiji Inoue and everyone else would come up with that much on their side. But I don't know. I think it's more for the third parties.
It's interesting because if you mention the Star Fox and F-Zero, those are so stylized, those games, that they actually still look fantastic on the GameCube versus where they are potentially going to go. Like, the angled nature of the craft in Star Fox, they're designed in such a way that they actually don't need anything more than what they have. Like, it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Also, that thing of, like, what do you actually want to see? I love Star Fox. That and Metroid are my top two Nintendo franchises. So I would love to see a new Metroid. Obviously, Metroid Prime 4 is a long overdue. But yeah, I think yours would probably be F-Zero. I think they're both
quite... I 100% would love to see something like that appear again, especially seeing as recently the director of the original games came out and said, like, yeah, I want to make it. Like, this is not from a lack of want on my side, just somebody give me the green light, as it were.
If you get like a 120 frames a second F-Zero, but it's handheld, you just hold it to your face.
I mean,
it'd
be crazy.
Through.
I'm surprised that they don't use the sort of motion controller that, to turn at that, although I think that it probably wouldn't work with the requirements of how steep the turns are in some of the games. But still, like, I'd love to see something like that. I'd love to see even just games that don't need technical powerhouses to come back. Give me a new Punch-Out game. Give me some good old classics that did so well on the Wii. Like, let's see them get another revamp.
Yeah, I also want to see, and it has to be free, but a whatever the new system's called version of Tears of the Kingdom, like an upgrade.
I thought you were going to say Wii Sports. I genuinely thought you were going to say, like, give us like Wii Sports 3. Like, that to me would, again, would be like, or like Switch Sports.
I mean, that Switch Sports thing they put out, I feel like, was just like a damp squib, a little mouse fart in the corner.
That's,
it was
what
just
we
like
a new one. Like, it's like, we were even talking the other day about how good the Wii Sports, the free disc that you got with it, like, that is iconic gaming right there. Some of the best
more
mini games
stuff.
There.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, consoles with pack-ins always get the games out there. Like, it's an easy way to do it. Question from Toby Wellington, who says, Starfield or No Man's Sky? I've never played either. This is actually a really hard question. I think if you, as someone who loves both and has over 100 hours in No Man's Sky and about 20 in Starfield, it depends what you want. If you want a story, it's Starfield. If you want raw exploration, it's No Man's Sky.
Yeah, I'm finding that the developer responses coming out at the moment with them saying, like, the reason that these in Starfield, the reason that the planets are barren is because that's what it would be like to actually explore a barren planet, and trying to explain that away or hand wave it and be like, look, this is why we haven't put any stuff to do in there. It doesn't make it any more fun to traverse across an empty world with nothing to do. So I think that, like you say, in terms of No Man's Sky, like, exploring in that game is fun. Like, even though you may be mining the same materials from in the same sort of caves, it's always got something to do. There's a reason to go to a planet. Whereas these ones here, I'm actually looking at guides before I start diving in, just going like, can I skip this planet? Do I actually even need to land here? And there's actually a surprising amount of people that are just going like, right, don't land here, don't land there, don't bother going to that place, this entire cluster, pointless. And it's like, well, that's kind of sad in a way.
It's definitely going to be, that side of it is definitely going to be subjective in terms of, like, I was never expecting, because they said, I think there's like 1,000 planets and a couple hundred are authored. And I quite like that there's a lot of, let's call it like negative space to then and reinforce the civilizations and the settlements and all that kind of stuff, like across that space. Like, it is what it would be like if we just just spread out across the whole galaxy.
I agree with you. I do understand.
And then when
that.
You do, you know, stumble upon something, it's like, oh my God, in the middle of all this settlement, there's one little group of nomads who are surviving out on this moon somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's really, I really love that. But at the same time.
But I think that there should be like, exploring and rewarding the player are so key to get that balance.
Yes.
Like, you don't want to drip feed it so much that people are just like, well, is there something to do here? Am I missing? Is the game broken? Like, is there, am I, there meant to be people that have loaded and not loaded in?
True.
Like, that is a game design choice that I don't necessarily agree with, because video games are meant to be fun. And if you're time poor, like me and you are, effectively, we're trying to hold down full-time jobs, try and have a fulfilling social lives and do other stuff in real world as well. The idea of maybe spending an evening exploring 3 to 4 planets and one of them having something to do on, that's actually quite a negative experience for me.
No, it definitely would be if that was explicitly the case. It definitely, like, I've never come away from Starfield thinking that I wasted my time. I've always found something. They do a really good job of designating which planets are just for materials and where you should land on those planets to just get materials.
It's funny that you just mentioned about the designation thing of like, oh, it clearly tells you where to go with that. Doesn't clearly tell you on a bloody map though, does it? Where's the bloody map? Where's the inventory management stuff like that? For a game that requires so much of your backpack space to be constantly micromanaged, it is the worst at telling you where stuff
UI's
is going.
Bad. I've got used to it now, but it's sheer Stockholm syndroming to get there. Like, it is just, I mean, the functionality is there. It's just terribly, the UI side of it's bad.
I think that that's another little bone that I've got to pick with the devs on that one there, where they just, again, try and hand wave it away. It's like, oh, you wouldn't have a map. It's like you're exploring it for the first time. No one would know where this charting stuff is. And like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, but there's always going to have to be a yes, but, because you're still making a game. If you're going to make a simulation, then you would needed to have approached this from a completely different angle. If you're telling me that your poor game design philosophy here is going to be explained away as, nah, pal, that's just what it would have been like to try
It's weird, because I do, for now, and maybe it'll change over time, I do like what they've built. The surface map stuff sucks, but it's one of those things where you can set a waypoint, and then when you put your scanner on, it just shows you the floor path like Dead Space.
Yeah.
So it's like, there are still ways to get around, and I quite like that you're not looking at maps as much. But at the same time, when I just want to find a merchant and offload a bunch of stuff,
that is
you can't do it.
Yeah,
and so you're just walking around, looking at street. Which again, some people will find this as a positive: looking at street signs, looking at buildings. Okay, that person seems like they might be a trader. Maybe I can sell stuff to them.
Yeah.
And it's what it would be like if you were exploring yourself. And I do like that level of immersion. But at the same time,
the game is just like, okay, we're not going to hold your hands, but it's like, but we're not holding your hands on specifically things that are just wasting my time now. Like this is a waste of time moment to look around for a potential vendor. Highlight that, make something else more obtuse, make a puzzle solution more obtuse, because that is a meaningful like reward for the player when they uncover and discover and overcome that obstacle. But if you're just going like, yeah, you're gonna waste the next 30 minutes walking around trying to sell this like goo blob that you've just picked up here, it's like, oh well, fantastic.
It is a weird thing where, like, yeah, they've tried to walk a line. For me, I'm blown away by Starfield overall. That it's like reminding me of what Bethesda were like in 2011, and like, I'm just absolutely loving getting lost in it. And I haven't, like I said, I've not come away from any of it yet. If anything, I wish I had more time. Like, it's one of those you blink and 5 hours have passed.
I've seen your tweet about how many games you're playing at the moment, Scott. You have time. You're just choosing to cut between them all the time.
I'm trying to balance it. I still need to finish Armored Core. There's the amount of different things that are all doing the rounds.
We're in the era of great games, though. It's hard, man, because it's like, how do you choose? And with Baldur's Gate still eating people's lives, and most people are saying it's game of the year, right now, it's just a case of like, how do you justify spending time on these games? They're too big.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and it's, I'm trying to get through Armored Core. I'm loving Armored Core as well. It's great, and I'm playing Sea of Stars on my Switch. And then like I travel, like, I have one game per system at the minute, so I'm sort of just going through them. And then Starfield's so enrapturing that I'm just doing that.
Have you finished Bomb Rush Cyberpunk yet?
I've not, mate.
That's a small game, and then you can reward yourself with a big game afterwards. It's like finishing a horrible. No, that's just going to sound bad. I love this game so much. I was going to say. Like eating a horrible part of your meal to have dessert, but this is like
I was gonna say it's like veggies in the main.
It's like eating a smaller dessert before having a bigger dessert.
I love you to through gritted teeth. Finish that one, yeah. And then you can have the big meal.
Finish it, mate.
Get it done.
If I was up in Newcastle right now, mate, I would be prompting you every single day to go back and finish your older games. You'd be happier.
Oh, dude,
overall.
I know. I get through the majority of them. Like Bomb Rush is something that dropped in the middle of two other things. So I was like, I'll download it, I'll play it. That's my Switch bed game.
Don't you make this Bomb Rush's fault. This is a you problem. This is you.
I tell you what, for blaming UI, Bomb Rush's map UI stuff sucks. I can't. Where am I going next? Where am I going next? The little pip that's somewhere on the
Who
map.
Cares
maybe?
Where you go next? Just go.
To be fair, the soundtrack absolutely slaps.
I listened to it all the way into the bath office yesterday. Just as soon as I got on the train, to the moment that I got off, it was just like. I was like, this is so fun.
I had Starfield soundtrack on when I was on the train on the way in this morning, and all the way the doors were opening, like going in and out. I was like, this is kind of like an airlock. Yeah. I was just like listening to the epic first flight music, going there, pretending I'm in a spaceship.
Amazing.
Like a 6-year-old. Question from Dan Taylor, who says, question for Jules. Hello. I just got a PC and I was wondering if there were any games you think are the most significantly different or better to play on PC over console.
That is a tough one, actually, because, I mean, apart from PCs, usually, like, if they're console game first and then they get ported to PC, there's usually they come with the whole sort of gear of Game of the Year edition, so they've got all the DLC, a few extras added in there. Mm. But there's none that I would say that I particularly...
Like, demonstrably better, I guess.
I'd say that first-person shooters with a mouse and keyboard, I hands down agree with the PC community, are just phenomenal because of the twitch reflexes that you have, the ability and control that you have there.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes more field of view sliders, because you've definitely got higher frame rates as well.
You can
respond and shoot just literally faster.
There's been so many examples when I've been playing like Exo Primal recently, I've just been dipping in and out of. It's just like the ability to fluidly switch my target so quickly versus when I played it on the controller was just like, oh man, this is so slow and clunky.
Right.
And I'm fine.
I've always just did analog sticks like a peasant.
But it's weird because there's games like Armored Core. I'm playing that on PC at the moment and I have to use the controller. I find the amount of keys that you've got to constantly be pressing to fire off every single weapon rack that you've got overwhelming. I'm just like, no, there's too many. I've just got to go back to controller where it makes sense, where I can just go like trigger, shoulder button.
I was going to say Armored Core is like, it's the claw. It's like, it's all four shoulders the time, set everything off all the time. But yeah, definitely frame rate stuff and definitely just general sort of performance quality is going to be better on PC if it's been optimized in the right way.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, all I'm thinking of when you said optimized properly was that Batman Arkham game, which was,
Arkham
Knight. Just like so bad. It's such bad optimization where they basically, Warner Brothers threw their hands up and said, yeah, we've released the game, you fix it. Like,
yeah, but I think they give money back or they recalled it or something eventually. Yeah. Like, that game didn't last long. Mike Neal says, a real talk, is Starfield better for those who have loved Bethesda or a first timer looking for a space odyssey? I just want to clarify with Starfield that it does take a few hours to get going, which just seems to be the general like go-to sentiment for this. Thankfully, it's not like 20 hours. It's not Final Fantasy 13, but it is about 3 to 5. There is a weird onboarding thing, the amount of stuff they throw at you.
Yeah.
And it takes a little bit for you to find your feet in terms of like, okay, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? And what is the lore to the wider universe?
Well, I know for a fact that the game allows, there's a... not a new game plus a mode effectively, but there is effectively
that is tied to a huge spoiler, by the way, before you go any further.
Oh, okay. I will not say anything then apart from that bit. But that, like,
I don't know specifics either, but I've just heard there's a new game plus and that it relates to some sort of plot thing that's never been done in a game before. Then blah, blah.
You said about the onboarding thing, but I know that the onboarding thing there, they've minimized a lot of it to cater for people returning to it. So they go like, do you know this bit? Skip it. Done. But
there's definitely
I've heard that is a good way if you're returning to the game and fancy another go around the sun, as it were.
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of like how many of these we've had now. Like, it is another Bethesda game, but even like Fallout 4's intro was like notably rushed. Like, I like hated how fast, like, the first sort of 10 minutes you've got. It's considering they talked about it, we would do all the pre-war stuff. And then
the weirdest thing is that Fallout 4 still gets a lot of flack for not starting up quick enough, because in my opinion, New Vegas was the perfect way to do it. Because
that's what Joshua says,
Well, it basically just goes like, you're a courier in the world, you already know how the world existed and operates beforehand. It makes sense why you want to hoard caps, because you understand that that is the currency of the time. Things don't like freak you out as much because of the fact you're already in the world before. You get capped in the head, somebody says, look, you're better now, get out of my house, and then you go, cool, we're done. That makes sense. But when it's like Fallout 3 and 4, when it's just like, oh, you're from a vault, you have no understanding of the world before, and you should have much more sort of like, wait, what's going on here? Like,
definitely,
how are you easing me into this? I think
what's a super mutant?
Genuinely, I think the Fallout 76 is the worst way of doing it, though, because it was that, like, you've been in the pod, you've been told that it's exploration day or whatever it's called, and then you go outside and it's like, I immediately know what to do. Immediately know. And it's like, come on, man. Like, for you being the first generation of settlers, it should be the weirdest thing, but you're like, nah, cool, bang, 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 bang.
It's a weird thing. Starfield has is the premise has a Mass Effect premise. Like, you're playing as a miner, like an actual underground miner, and you touch an artifact and you see something, and then you have the Mass Effect thing of like, oh, I've just seen some sort of vision, whatever that is.
I've brushed up against the marker again,
and so you go from there, and so it's like that should be very propulsive, but the way that they deal with it is quite grounded and is sort of like, let's talk about every possible permutation of that, which is great, but it does then take, and then because they then do the Bethesda thing of like, you can just go spend 50 hours on the planet you're on or do whatever you want. It's very like, here's your ship, go explore if you want, go talk to these characters. You're also part of Constellation, which is the main group of people trying to explore the cosmos. But all of it kind of comes at you at once, and it's like, oh my God, okay, what's my actual grounding here? Like, you're building a character, you're being put upon in terms of this call to this vision. Like, yeah.
I always think to myself that video games that understand the relationship between disaster and engagement. I always want my stories to start quick, then slow down after a set event. Dead Island 2 does a good example of that, where like, you are leaving on the plane, it explodes, you fight, you move, you then get the story explained to you afterwards. I like them where you just go, we're going to give you that. Like, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance is another good example. It gives you that whole sort of like tutorial level. You smash your way through, you feel amazing, and then the game explains the greater mechanics of what's going on. I think with Starfield, the way that you've described it is kind of like, here's a thing. Let's slow right down to a crawl, talk about everything, and then we'll ease you back into the action. Whereas I want to be jumped in first, almost be confused and overwhelmed by it, as you would be in a situation that's completely foreign to you, and then have things make sense afterwards.
You can kind of play it that way. If you just talk to the more main characters in the Lodge, which is like the HQ, you can kind of like expedite that stuff. It's just that some of the things that I wanted more to do with like the universe itself, the galaxy, like what are the rules? What are the different colonies? Like, why are we living in this major city? What's actually happened? And why is humanity here, et cetera, et cetera. And you can get those answers. There's actually a really cool museum that you can walk through. It tells you about humanity's history across the last couple of hundred years and how we went from Earth to there and what happened to Earth.
Exposition that's a slightly interactive then.
It's just weird because it's optional, and unless you do the first Vanguard mission, that character won't trigger the museum stuff unless you find the museum yourself.
Interesting.
So, but to answer Mike Neal's direct question, it's for both. Like, if you've loved Bethesda, it's the best Bethesda. It's the best they've been since Skyrim to me. If you're looking for a space odyssey, it's incredibly vast. Like, I mean, you have to get used to the fact that you're not manually taking off. You're hitting a button to do it. Everything is like instanced. Like, you're either on the ground, you're in space, or you're like dogfighting, but it's all like you're loading screens between those things.
Right, I'm with
you.
So
it's it's still the creation engine. It's still the old Fallout 4 engine. So it's like they've had to try and make that work on a huge scale.
It's the new pushing through the cracks that you loved so much from God of War.
Kinda. It's just like, yeah, you can see the cracks for sure in this. Yeah. But when the music hits and you're out there and it's like, it's so open-ended. I love it. Like at the minute, it is by far my game of the year.
Interesting.
It's right up against Final Fantasy 16.
Wow, okay, fair enough,
but
man.
It's like, it's great. Last question from Honest NPC, who says, why do Sony hate their own handhelds? The PSP had those expensive memory cards. The PS Vita was sent to the naughty corner, and the new PlayStation Portal, won't stream PlayStation subscription content or even let you use your own Bluetooth headphones. You have to use your own expensive ones. What do you think of Sony's... To me, it's stupid. Yeah. Stupid way of re-entering the handheld market.
I hate the way that they do this and then they double down on it with another stupid decision. It's like, here's something that you want, but you're going to have to make a few concessions. And you just go, okay, fine. But then it goes, and also this. And you're like, why? Mm-hmm. I was okay with it until this point, and now you just completely bungled it, you fool. Yeah, it's a shame.
It's the money as well. The price of it is ludicrous. It's like £200, $200 just to have a streaming tablet that our phones already are.
I know. Like, it's a really weird thing. It's like, did anyone actually ask for this version of you jumping back into the handheld market? Like, mm-hmm. I am fully on board with what you've been saying for years, Scott. The PSP and the PS Vita, completely underrated when it comes to hardware. Way. Like, the Vita is exceptionally good. There is no way of, like, if it had better support, if it had Nintendo's love and appreciation poured onto it and Sony doing that, then it probably would have taken over the 3DS because it probably... just needed a bit of the right time, the right marketing, the right push for it. But unfortunately, did not get any of that.
It's a really weird timing thing as well, because Switch has proven that people do want console quality, console level sized games on the go. Yep. And that's what the Vita tried to do. But at the time, all the write-ups, editorials were like, this isn't what we want from portables. We want portable experiences. Yeah. And they just sort of tried to walk that line and failed. There was the memory card issue on Vita as well. They had Sony branded Vita memory cards, which just meant you couldn't just put an SD card in it. So stuff like that got in the way as well. But yeah, if they did just a Vita system now and it just was that new tablet, they're in the right market position now. And like this people play the Switch, everything else. They're so bad at it. They're so bad at portable PlayStation systems.
And I don't understand who they're trying to market this to, because it's like, cool, I have something in my pocket that can do what this device can do and it hasn't cost me extra 200 quid and I can use whatever headphones that I want to with it.
Yeah, or any other, any controller, any accessory type stuff.
Very strange.
It's just worth throwing that one in. My throat will not let me get through this podcast. But to see how that thing shakes out, because that is launching, I think, later this year. For me, it's the price point's ridiculous. But we'll see. Speaking of seeing things, I'm seeing you. It's the Untitled Banter Podcast. Woo! UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tailford. That's been Jules Gale.
I have been indeed.
Please check out the Twitter, the social medias. I'll put another question out later in the week, and maybe I'll be joined by Jules, maybe I'll be joined by a special guest. You'll have to wait and see. For now, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. Thank you all very, very much, and we'll catch you very soon.
Bye-bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.